Hello guys and welcome back to the podcast. It's been a few months since the last episode dropped. Thank you for everyone who messaged me about it and shared it. It means so much to me, and also thank you for your patience. So in the past few months, I found myself really needing to step away more and more from the noise and polarization of social media. This is why it's been medicine for me to research, write, and produce these podcast episodes. And it takes me some time, but I get there. I believe in depth over distance. I believe in nuance over sound bites. I believe in asking questions over offering definitive answers, which is why I truly believe in what I'm creating here. I can't stress enough how much time and energy goes into each episode. A 20 to 30 minute production takes me literally weeks to think up, to research, to write, to record, to edit. And the process is very organic. I allow the topics to slowly creep up on me, most often when I'm out walking Manny, my dog, in nature. And then over the days and weeks following this, I take note of questions and avenues that are seeking to be explored. And then I go about researching and writing and recording and editing. So it's a lengthy but intrinsically satisfying process. And if you create content yourself, and I actually really don't like that phrase, content creator, I invite you to also explore depth over distance and slowness over distance with your creation. Because our frantic, algorithm-driven world may be pushing us to distill complex and nuanced ideas into 4-second sound bites, but I believe that this is ultimately dangerous. When there's no room for complexity, context, nuance, or debate, it's fertile ground for fundamentalism. So I view the Regenerate with Dr. Sarah Coxon podcast as a body of work. I would like it to play even a small part in changing culture by offering in-depth, well-thought-out explorations of intersecting topics. So with this in mind, I don't try to come up with topics that are algorithm-friendly or use clickbaity titles. I create what I think is interesting, useful, and hopefully unique. So this means that the success of the podcast, therefore, relies on your support. And the easiest way you can help me is by subscribing and leaving a 5-star review. And if you feel like helping me out even more, then you can share it on your socials and you can tag me so I can say hi, or you can share it with your friends that you think would love it. And also, I really do enjoy a good DM or an email as well, because it makes me feel more connected to you guys. Every subscribe, review, share, and message deeply matters to me. So yeah, thank you for your help and your support. So back to the episode. Today we are exploring money, and more specifically, the role of money in society through the ages, how we lost our collective way, and how to relate to money differently in order to pave the way for the social and environmental change that is very much needed. And if you're enrolled in my somatic course, Money Alchemy, this episode will help lay the foundations for our time together. More on that later. You're listening to Regenerate with Dr. Sarah Coxon, and this is Money and the New Earth Revolution. Welcome to Regenerate, a podcast that explores healing and intentional change through the lens of somatics and principles of regeneration. This is a podcast where witchy magic, collective medicine, nature's intelligence, and political discourse weave together. I'm your host, Dr. Sarah Coxon. I'm an archaeologist turned author, researcher, somatic nervous system priestess, and somatics teacher, devoted to the path of collective reclamation and regeneration. My intention with this podcast is to educate and inspire you to live in greater coherence with what matters most to you. Regeneration, the process of healing, renewal, and restoration, the weaving ourselves back into nature's great web, the coming home to what matters most. Let's dive in. You've heard that phrase, quote, money makes the world go round, end quote. And I guess in our modern society, this is very true. But for many of us, it's also a source of struggle and strife, as well as possibility and hope. As individuals, our access to and the way we relate to money vary significantly. Some of us don't have enough and are barely surviving. Others of us aren't too bad at earning money, but we're not very good at saving it. There are those of us who may have financial wealth, but work ourselves to the bone to have it at the expense of our health, family, and relationships. There are those of us who've been born into wealth, but feel guilty about it because we feel like we haven't earned it. And there are even those of us who do have more than enough money, but it never feels enough. In my coaching practice, I've seen it all. Every single one of us has a money story and a money blueprint, the tale we tell ourselves about money and the way we relate to money. Much of this is down to our social, cultural, and familial conditioning and environment. Our financial situation can also, of course, highlight social biases related to gender or race or physical ability or how we look, for example. But it isn't necessarily defined by them. I believe it's important for each of us to understand what our money blueprint is for three reasons. First, money is a mirror, reflecting back to us the ways in which we engage with life itself. If we're experiencing certain dynamics in our financial lives, you can bet your bottom dollar, no pun intended, that we'll be experiencing that kind of dynamic in other areas of our life too. Struggle with earning money? Maybe you also struggle with honoring your needs in relationships or at work. Struggle with saving money? Maybe you have issues with boundaries in general. Struggle with spending compulsively? Maybe you find yourself seeking constant dopamine stimulation. Understanding our money blueprint helps us to take stock of our patterns and habits in relationship to the way we live life. Second, money is a tool. And if we are serious about saving the planet, quote unquote, we sure as hell need all the tools we can gather at our disposal. Money is one of them. And if, like I said before, money makes the world go round, then money has a similar mystical quality to the energy of life force itself. Money isn't energy, but it acts like energy. And when energy is intentionally directed and harnessed in the direction of things we care about, magical things can happen. Three, money is a game. And there are certain timeless principles when it comes to money that guarantee success with it. And if we want to feel empowered around money, these are the rules we have to learn. I don't know about you, but my heart yearns for revolution. A new earth revolution. Maybe it's the Aquarian in me, but I'm here for change. Deep, lasting change. The systems we have now, they're broken. Corruption, greed, and overconsumption has seeped into every single cog of the machine. I look at modern cultures and see the overall entitlement and lack of reverence for our great mother, and it makes me so sad. We're in the middle of the sixth mass extinction, and yet so many of us are overconcerned with becoming super rich, manifesting millions, jet-setting around the world, upgrading our devices every few months. Consumption for the sake of consumption, the byproduct of the rise of the middle classes. And all the while, we're losing hundreds of acres of biodiverse forests a day. And all the while, hundreds of species go extinct every week. And all the while, the gap between the wealthy and the poor increases. And all the while, we're not actually happier. So yeah, this Aquarian wants the new Earth revolution, one that paves the way for a new way of being on planet Earth. A way where we're applauded not on how big and expensive our possessions are, but on how big our hearts are. Where economical success is redefined by how well people, communities, and ecosystems are doing, where everyone has access to the resources they need to live meaningful, fulfilled lives, and where chasing profit for the sake of profit just isn't the done thing anymore. So yeah, this Aquarian is holding the vision of a new Earth revolution so that we can finally come home. Money is certainly at the root of a lot of the corruption and destruction we're seeing playing out in modernity, but it wasn't always this way. In fact, money hasn't always actually existed in the world. But before we explore this further, first, let's zoom out a bit and think about what money actually is. In our modern society, money is far more than a currency of exchange. It has become a system of social agreements, meanings, and symbols. Money can buy us resources, goods, and property, yes, but it's also heavily involved in upholding status and hierarchies of power. And this is perhaps not what it was intended for during its early conception. Before the widespread adoption and circulation of money, exchange throughout the world was facilitated through a process called bartering. The mediums used to facilitate the exchange were often things that were directly useful in and of themselves, for example, livestock or sacks of grain. You would exchange one sack of barley for whatever it was that you were purchasing, perhaps a ceramic pot or cloth, for example. And the nature of grain or livestock is that they are perishable, meaning you wouldn't have been able to hoard such commodities, and if you didn't use them, they would spoil. Money as the symbolic representation of value solved this problem. Now, it's hard to know where the first monetary systems emerged because we have no real written record, although there is some evidence for ancient systems of accounting, for example, in the Upper Paleolithic around 30,000 years ago in Europe, and also possibly in Egypt around 20,000 years ago. In ancient Mesopotamia, which is now modern-day Iraq, we have evidence for systems of accounting dating to around 7,000 years ago. But there were no metal coins or bits of paper during these times. The earliest evidence of coinage as a medium of exchange comes from ancient Lydia, an Iron Age kingdom located in what is now Western Turkey. Dating to the 8th century BC, these coins were found in votive deposits in temples dedicated to the goddess Artemis. Made from a naturally occurring alloy of gold and silver, it's clear that they had value and perhaps played a central role in various religious rituals. As time wore on in Europe, the ancient Greeks adopted coinage, as did the Romans who came later. And then, perhaps as a result of Roman imperialism and the expansion of trade routes across its empire and beyond, coinage then emerged in places such as the Middle East, then later on in India, and so on. In some other places like China, it seems that coinage may have emerged independently. Regardless of how and why the use of coinage spread, one thing is certain is that throughout the last 1,000 years in many cultures across the globe, physical money has become a staple part of the economic landscape. So what does this tell us? It tells us that money, and consequently the love of money, and also the pursuit of profit over everything else, is still a relatively recent phenomenon in terms of human history. Now we're in the age of digital currency. This money doesn't exist physically in the form of metal and paper. It exists as a number on a bank's computer. In many ways, it would be fair to say that money in today's modern world is ethereal, just like energy. And not to be alarmist, but if the banking system were ever to collapse or get hacked or anything like that, then who knows what could happen to this money? Kind of wild, right? And yet, I know that when the numbers at the top of my savings account are stable or growing, I feel stable and secure. And when they start decreasing, well, it's a different story. So digital currency may be intangible, but it has real-world implications on our emotions and behaviors. And these numbers, although they aren't rooted in anything actually physical, they impact our purchasing ability and therefore our choice and power in the modern world. And there's also now crypto. Now, I don't know a huge amount about cryptocurrencies, and I've decided not to go too much down that rabbit hole for this episode, but there are new currencies such as Bitcoin that are independent from the world banking system, and this is apparently precisely why they've been created. Bitcoin in particular, with its blockchain technology, is virtually impossible to be hacked or manipulated, or so they say. And I wanted to mention cryptocurrency because I think this new kind of currency has the potential to change the way we relate to money as a collective. As Charles Eisenstein wrote, quote, "On a basic level, I'm kind of fond of cryptocurrency as a concept simply because it has disrupted the story of money that says, here's what money is, here what has to be, here's how money is done. And it's saying, no, it doesn't." So even if cryptocurrencies in their current incarnation are not the key to the future, as their proponents think, even so, they still liberate the conversation from its old confines. And that's a really good thing. So even if I have, you know, lots of reasons to disapprove of various instantiations of cryptocurrency, I'm still kind of a fan of just the general, the basic impulse behind them. Just kind of introducing a wild card into the system. I like it. End quote. What I take from that is that it doesn't necessarily mean that we should swap everything we have for cryptocurrencies today and cryptocurrencies will be the future, but it does show that the technology is there to start to make the money game a lot fairer. Whether that actually happens or not, though, remains to be seen. And currently, there's nothing fair about money in today's world. I actually used to dream of a world without money. Or more specifically, I'd fantasize about what life would be like if we didn't have to make money, or money wasn't bound up with status or power, and instead it just simply facilitated exchange between people as it was originally intended to. As a business owner, I have, especially at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, often cursed money. Asking people to purchase my services and financially support me and my livelihood a few years ago felt really uncomfortable. I didn't like it. But over the years, I've had to mature, realizing that it's almost childish to reject money because it's akin to rejecting reality. And the reality is, in our society, we all need money. Not only to survive, but to thrive in bringing our medicine to the world. Money can certainly help us do this. So I've since realized that it's not money per se that's the problem. It's our current economic model and how it funnels money up to the top of the pyramid and relies on those at the bottom to earn very little and get into debt. More on that in a moment, but for now, what I think is important to stress is that money isn't the problem. Capitalist indoctrination is. It's capitalist indoctrination that has robbed us of our power and humanity. And perhaps one of the ways to reclaim them isn't to reject money, but instead to learn to relate to money in ways that bring us back to our humanity. Kate Raworth, author of Donut Economics, argues that our current economic model is unsustainable and that we need to reimagine measuring progress. You see, we've all been taught that progress is measured by infinite growth. The measurement of how healthy a country's economy is determined by its GDP, which stands for Gross Domestic Product. What this is essentially the cost of the goods and services sold within an economy within a year. It's one single number. And governments around the globe subscribe to this mindset that if GDP is up, then everything else is good. But Kate argues that this isn't the case because this model of economy drives us deeper into mass consumerism, which is a one-way ticket to further entrenched social inequality and climate injustice. Global GDP is 10 times bigger than it was in 1950, and billions of people are certainly living with more prosperity. Yet still, more money than ever is being funneled up to the 1%, and with the increasing production and selling of goods, all of which require the use of Mother Earth's precious resources, we are rapidly destabilizing our planet. Capitalist indoctrination has led us all to believe that if we're constantly not growing, something is wrong. And what this means is that for many of us, the way we relate to money is warped and sometimes even disordered. For example, how many people grind themselves into the ground working high-paid corporate jobs, but in doing so, they sacrifice their health or relationships? Or how many people spend money they don't necessarily have, all in an attempt to keep up with the Joneses? Or how many of us unconsciously measure someone else's value to society based on their net worth? Kate Raworth says the health of an economy should be based on many different indicators, and limitless growth doesn't have to be one of them. And I wonder if the same perhaps can be said of how we relate to money as individuals. I believe that the problem for many of us isn't money itself. Money is just the messenger. It's how we relate to money, how we use money, and what the goals are that actually matter. So rather than growth and more at any cost, I wonder if our goals need to be on earning and managing money in a way that helps us thrive at individual and communal levels. And that's not the same as the endless pursuit of profit. Because I don't actually believe that money is the measurement of success. I believe that well-being is. And if we want to measure how well we're doing when it comes to money, then instead of counting how much of it we have, surely it's better for us to focus on how well we are doing in life overall. So what does money actually do for us? What's the point in it? I like to think of money as a tool which directs the flow of resources, which means that money is only as useful as what we choose to do with it. Money can obviously buy us shelter and food, which are essentials, obviously. Money can also buy us a certain level of comfort and safety. As someone who never really had much money, but now has access to savings and investments and earning potential, I can tell you from personal experience that there's certainly a deeper sense of psychological and nervous system safety when you have enough. So I know, for example, that I can pay for medical bills and emergency travel to see friends and family, and I can afford to take off time off work if I need to, because I have an adequate safety net. I built that up, and that feels really good for me. And I wish this feeling for everyone. Money can also buy us status if we want it to, and it does so by allowing us to own bigger things. Bigger houses, bigger cars, designer labels. For many people, these things are important. And this actually makes sense because it's very human to ascertain how well we are doing by measuring ourselves up against others and how well they are doing. Status and prestige goods are another language that we use as a species to communicate to each other where we are in the social pecking order. And I can tell you, as an ex-archaeologist, that we have been doing this for thousands upon thousands of years. It is not new. Money can also buy us time. Time to do what we want and when we want to do it, more or less. For me personally, rather than growing or scaling my business, I decided I wanted to maintain the amount of revenue it brings in, but focus on creating leverage so that I could free up more of my time and make sure that I'm engaging in work that really does light me up. And that's exactly what I've done. I don't really earn that much more than I did 3 or 4 years ago, but I do have a lot more time. I am so time rich. And with that time, I grow herbs and vegetables. I spend time hiking in nature. I go to classes. I go to the beach. I learn new things. I hang out with my friends and family. And I generally live a very pleasant existence. And it also means I can offer free events and create episodes like this and generally follow my creative impulses. This is what thriving looks like for me. And then this, how we spend our money. If we're thinking collectively, where we direct our money is a way of using our voice. And we can choose to buy from companies and people who reflect our values and our desires for our communities and planet. We can choose to boycott too. And I think there's great power and responsibility in where we direct our money that sometimes we perhaps overlook. So if we are relating to money in ways that are empowering, we view money as a tool, nothing more, nothing less. It's not a measure of our worth, and our access to it simply tells us about the privileges that we've had, perhaps, or the choices that we've made around it. Nothing more, nothing less. I believe that money is a window into how we relate to life itself. And very often our money situation is a reflection of our default behaviors and beliefs about ourselves and the world. It's often said that how we do one thing in life is how we do everything. And I do think this is mostly true, especially when it comes to money. For example, if we are generous with our time, perhaps we are more likely to be generous with our money. If we tend to be reserved and overly cautious in general, we might be avid savers or never splurge on ourselves or never take the kind of risks that allow for more money to flow into our lives. If we tend to devalue ourselves, then we might not ask for the pay rise or the fees that are deserving of our level of skill or talent. If we tend to care too much about what other people think, we might find ourselves buying things to try to make ourselves look better in the eyes of others. In fact, Morgan Housel, author of The Psychology of Money, has a great quote about this in particular. He says, quote, "You can spend less if you desire less, and you will desire less if you care less about what others think of you. Less ego, more wealth. Saving money is the gap between your ego and your income," end quote. And I think this is partially true, although I also believe that this obviously doesn't apply to people living in abject poverty. But I think the core of what he is saying rings very true, that we relate to money better when we desire less, and we desire less when we take care of and are grateful for what we already have, and when we care less about what other people think about us. And this is where doing the inner work when it comes to money is vital. Money is not my God, but it has a godlike quality, facilitating magic wherever it flows. As I gaze at the microphone I'm currently using to record this episode, I can see that it's made of metal and plastic and fabric, raw materials that were extracted from the ground of Mother Earth and expertly woven together to create a device that captures sound. Money made this happen. Money flowed first to the miners, then to the makers, then to the distributors. The flow of money directed all of that activity, and because of that, I am now recording my voice, leaving an imprint of it suspended in time for you to listen to whenever you choose. Money is not my God, but it has a godlike quality, facilitating trickery and illusion wherever it flows. Stock markets and GDP rise and fall, boom and bust, unpredictable like the weather, untamable like the sea, and yet they have so much power over us. The rising and dropping of numbers on a computer have an incredible amount of impact on people's lives. Money is not my God, but it has a godlike quality, facilitating death and destruction wherever it flows. In our world, there is so much food waste, and yet so many people going hungry. In our world, there are so many people living on the streets, and meanwhile we pour money into weapons that kill entire communities and wars that destroy entire cities, devastating lives. In our world, we extract so much from Mother Earth that we're wiping out entire forests and killing coral reefs. All of this happens in a world with money. Money is the tool, and money is the mirror. It mirrors us. In fact, money amplifies what's already inside of us. The magic, the capacity for trickery and manipulation, the ability to destroy, and the disconnection from and disregard for Mother Earth herself. Where do we go from here? If money makes the world go round and we are here for the New Earth Revolution, we need a new way of relating to money, a new economics, or as Charles Eisenstein calls it, sacred economics. He writes, quote, "Over 5,000 years, money has evolved from its material origins to a symbol riding on material to pure symbol today. Sacred economics seeks not to undo this evolution, but to fulfill it. The agreement that is money does not stand in isolation from other systems of signs and symbols by which our civilization operates. We can embody in our money new agreements about the planet, the species, and what we hold sacred. For a long time, we held progress sacred, the advancements of science and technology, the conquest of the natural realm. Our money system supported these goals. Our goals are changing now, and with them the great meta-stories of which the agreement called money is a part. The story of the self, the story of the people, and the story of the world. End quote. What Charles is saying is that if we rewrite what money means to us and how we relate to it, we can not only create the kind of lives we want and liberate ourselves from a lot of suffering, but we can also shape the world for the better. How we relate to money is key. And this is not the same as being in a relationship with money, because just as there's no need to worship money, there's also no need to anthropomorphize money and bestow upon it human-like qualities it doesn't have. Remember, it's a tool invented by humans. It is not a human, but it has human-like qualities. And one of those qualities is to shape reality, in the same way a knife can be used by a sculptor to fashion clay into a work of art. The new earth that we're here to usher in is that work of art. But first, we need to learn how to use that knife with skill, how to relate to money in a way that empowers us to move closer to what we care about for ourselves, each other, and the planet. Take a moment now to focus on the new earth that you want to come into existence. Maybe it starts with you and you doing meaningful work in the world and you having minimal stress and more time to do the things you love and having more time to spend with the people you love. Maybe it continues with your community where there is maybe more connection and closeness. Maybe it continues further with global society where there is far less inequity, poverty, needless disease and war, where all people have dignity and safety. And then maybe it ripples out further and there is no more ecocide and forests and oceans can repair and regenerate and biodiversity returns and the land thrives once again. When we relate to money differently, we free and liberate ourselves and others. And this is where I believe somatics comes in. Whenever we are learning and refining a new skill, such as the skill of money, our body is the interface through which we do so. Our embodiment, who we are being and how we are acting in the world, is the vehicle through which we are able to create a new story of money, a new blueprint for how we think about, earn, grow, manage and direct it. To change how we relate to money, we need to go on a somatic journey, one that takes us from learned and conditioned ways of being in the world into more empowered embodiments that mirror what we want for ourselves, others, and the planet. Money is the great amplifier, and when we amplify the necessary qualities in ourselves, money can carry these new qualities far and wide, bit by bit, fashioning the new earth that we are longing to create and experience. To change the story of money, you need to learn how to play the game of money, change how you relate to money, and change who you are being and how you are showing up in the world. So if money is a source of struggle for you, if you reject it, struggle to earn it, struggle to hold on to it, feel guilty about it, feel like somehow you're never quite in control of it, there's an inner transformation that needs to take place within you. And if you're up for it, I'm here to walk alongside you. If you'd like to go on a transformative somatic journey with me as your guide, you're invited to join Money Alchemy, a 3-week nervous system-based somatic journey that teaches you how to relate to money in a more empowering way so that you can not only earn more and save more yourself, but usher in the new earth with me. This course isn't going to tell you to become a vibrational match for money, and it's not about budgeting and accounting, nor is it about manifestation and wishful thinking. It's going to instead take you on a somatic journey that'll help you to build your capacity to earn, save, and intentionally manage and direct money in a way that makes you feel safer, more at peace with yourself, more open to opportunities, and do more good. If you've already registered, this podcast episode has set the scene, and I'm excited to dive in deeper with you during our time together. And if you haven't yet signed up and you'd like to, doors to register are currently open. You can click the link in the show notes or visit drsarahcoxon.com/moneyalchemy. And you'll see that there's also currently a generous discount, so you can join at a fraction of what the experience is worth. Regardless of if you join or not, I want to leave you with this. Money makes the world go round, but only because it's moved by us human beings. We have far much more power than we realize, and we reclaim that power when we start being intentional with how we interact with the things in our life. And money is one of these tools. See you next time. You've been listening to Regenerate with Dr. Sarah Coxon. Thank you for tuning in. A lot of work goes into each full episode, and the best way to support this project is to share this episode on your socials and with your friends every time you listen. This small act goes a long way in helping the podcast delight new ears so that we can grow our regenerative community of listeners. Thank you for your support, and I'll see you next time on Regenerate.